Remember when we were growing up in the 80s? And, I mean, Bruce was everywhere. Bruce was everywhere. Don Henley was everywhere. Who else was, oh, the late, the great, what is it, his name right now escapes me, Don, I'm gonna keep this in, because, you know, sometimes you have to search for the memory. But growing up in the 80s, you know, I'll say this, and people will laugh, I didn't know that Don Henley was in the Eagles because I was a little kid. I didn't know that Glenn Frey, now that's the name I was looking for, was in the Eagles. Now, Glenn Frey is no longer with us. He died a couple years ago. But when I was a kid in the 80s, the big songs were, you know, The Heat Is On and You Belong to the City, which was the Miami Vice theme song. A lot of people don't remember that. I remember that. And I actually had a single, a little 45, I remember it, of You Belong to the City. And it had like a rainbow on it. Oh, geez. And I would listen to it obsessively. And I had like this little record player, and I would listen to it. There's pictures of me listening to it, you know. And then the needle broke, and then they had to get me another needle. And, you know, this is before CDs, and this is before, you know, I probably started getting into cassettes and things like that. But, yeah, it was the 80s, and I opened with I'm on Fire, because last night my cousin and I, we went to this little bar in the middle of nowhere where she likes to go, and we sang. We did some karaoke, and she was like, it doesn't matter if you, you know, you can do this. And I said, well, I'm a singer, so, you know, I might overdo it because, you know, I'll hold a note or whatever. And she's like, that's fine. So we opened with a duet together. We did the Eagles' Hotel California. And that was fun. That was fun. You know, that's such a wicked song, too. And, you know, usually I'm used to singing, you know, like the Glenn Frey songs, you know, like Take It Easy. And I'm trying to think of Heartache Tonight. And here we're singing a Don, you know, that's a Don Henley song right there. You know, he's singing the lead on it, Hotel California. And then I did I'm on Fire, because I'm like, come on, I love Springsteen. How can you not love that song? Especially to hear him do it live. Ooh. And then I did Like a Stone, Audio Slave, because, you know, I grew up listening in the 90s to Soundgarden. And so, you know, I was telling my cousin, I said, you know, when I was coming up, my friends and I, you know, if we sang, there was always someone that you gravitated towards. There were the guys who wanted to sound like Eddie Vedder, you know, and I love Eddie, and the guys who wanted to sound like Cobain, which was impossible. And then there were those of us who were like, you know, I really want to try to reach those upper echelons that Chris Cornell can do. And so that's really, you know, when I started listening to Soundgarden, I would try to emulate his vocal take. It's like, not vocal take, but his vocal style, you know, because I thought it's loud. It's almost like he's doing calisthenics vocally. And I was just like, oh, I want to do that, because it was a very kind of Robert Plant. But Robert Plant even was like, I can't even sing like that. I was like, shit, you know. And so that's why I gravitated towards Cornell. I always have. And I can sing in his key slightly, you know, if I'm focused. And that's the name of the game here, is focused. And then I did One of These Nights by the Eagles, you know, because when I was little, I knew who the Eagles were. You know, my parents had those records, you know, and you'd look at them, Hotel California, and you'd look at, you know, The Greatest Hits and Take It Easy and Take It to the Limit. And One of These Nights and Witchy Woman and Tequila Sunrise. I know all the songs. But then, see, as a little kid, I didn't know that they were all now doing solo music. I didn't know that Glenn Frey, you know, his big hits were The Heat Is On and, you know, You Belong to the City. And then Don Henley, you know, Summer of 84, you know, the Boys of Summer. And I mean, Don Henley's so amazing, but Glenn was always my guy. you know, but in the Eagles, they, you know, was interesting. They would all kind of alternate lead vocals and stuff like that. And the harmonies were just amazing. So, yeah, we went to this bar. She sang, oh, my cousin is such an amazing vocalist. And did, you know, Aretha and did, that was it. She did Tina Turner. We were talking about Tina Turner. And my aunt saw Tina Turner in the 90s. And I was telling her how Cyndi Lauper opened for Tina. She went, really? And I said, well, I wasn't there, but my aunt, you know, she went there. It was after her divorce and enjoyed herself, shall we say. And so we always talk about that, her seeing Tina, because Tina still had it, you know. Tina didn't ever lose it. When Tina wanted to retire, people were shocked, you know. But my cousin really just brought it. And, I mean, you know, I was like, okay, you know, those are some big shoes to fill. And I got up to the mic and... the host and the announcer, the DJ, he's so amazing. He was like, man, thank you. I was you're welcome. And then someone close to him was having a birthday, and so they were singing happy birthday. And I went up to her and sang in Spanish, you know, Feliz cumpleaños. And he was like, whoa, no one's ever saying it. I said, well, you know, I am half Mexican, so of course I know that part of, you know, my roots. So, you know, they were happy about that. But yeah, it was a very good evening. And just getting to, you know, talk about music and talking about life. And, you know, it's I won't reveal what we talked about because that's between us, you know. And but musically, it was a good night. You know, I had like maybe a little bit and then, you know, but like, I you know, I can carry it. And you know, but mainly it was also about the conversation and where things go and how things fit. And especially when things seem uncertain and things seem lost and, you know, and it kind of, I thanked her because it kind of recalibrated me. I really needed it because, you know, I said to her, honestly, for the past couple of months, I felt like I was shot in the chest and I had trouble listening to music, and I told her the one song I don't have trouble listening to is Iris by the Goo Goo Dolls. And she's like, oh my God. And I said, I know. That is just the one song where it still hits me because it's such a beautiful song, you know? And I said, I fell in love with it. And I was a teenager, you know, and that's always been my song. And then she says, well, yeah, but Aerosmith, I Don't Want to Miss a Thing. I said, yeah, that was a good song. But for me, Iris was everything. Iris was just, you could pull it out and it's so ethereal and listen to it. And, you know, that's the thing about music, what music does for all of us. You know, and sometimes I talk about movies on here and sometimes I talk about music. But music is always my first love. I always wanted to be a musician and I couldn't because I couldn't play guitar very well. My fingers aren't long enough. My father can play guitar, but my father can't really sing. So don't tell him that. Because it kind of runs in the... Well, not kind of. I'm so tired. My grandmother was a singer. My great uncle is also... He's still alive. He's in his 90s. He's a singer. And they were a duo. And my grandmother was a belter. So... And my cousins and I, we all talk about that. How it's a family trait. You know, not everyone in the family has it, you know. You know, singing in the shower, cool, you know. Singing around the house, but yeah, you know, get up in front of people and, you know, you got to project and release this emotion that's within you. And I said to my cousin, it was a very good feeling, you know, because I was singing those songs from inside and they were just projecting out. And I said, you know, sometimes it's just, you need that grit to just throw it out there. And I intentionally picked those songs. And what's interesting is not realizing, oh, they all are interconnected. Because I'm a fire sign, so of course, I'm on fire, Bruce Springsteen. And how cool and calm that song is, but the lyrical content and how it builds. And then, of course, the end part, they were talking like, "Are you better hit these notes." And I was hitting them in the falsetto and he was like, whoa, you did that the falsetto. I was like, yeah, I got to. It's Bruce. And then one of these nights, you know, you got your demons and I got mine. And I identify with that right there. And then Hotel California, come on, I'm California boy, you know. And also that song is very kind of, you know, there's a lot of darkness and light and also innuendo, as well as the feast of temptations that everyone faces in California that are within the realm of Hotel California, which is real. Basically, I think it's a hotel. Is it the hotel? And it's in California. It's in Los Angeles. The Chateau Marmont, I believe. And then I sang Like a Stone, Audio Slave. Because that's just, come on, you know, if my cousin hadn't heard it before, and so we're outside, and I sang it outside with her and this one gentleman that we had befriended, and they were smoking, and he was like, well, that's pretty good, and I said, yeah, now I gotta get up on the mic, and I gotta do it, you know, and I said, you know, that's just one of those songs, you know, you hear it, and it becomes yours. And so, I was channeling though. I was really channeling when I was hitting those songs. I mean, because it's like, it's not just everyone that's in the room. It's like, okay, who am I singing this to? I've got some ideas of whom I'm singing those to, you know, and I'm not going to reveal. So, but it felt good. It felt good. Because, yeah, you're giving it to the audience, but also deep inside, it's like, yeah, I know what I'm conjuring here. I know what I'm bringing to the forefront. And so that's what music does. Music is such a freeing, spiritual thing. And so for people to equate it with this or that, you know, for me, it's about the soul. And it's about just throwing it out there and releasing it. And so, yeah, we're going to do it another weekend, I believe, which is good, you know. I won't know until I get there what I'm going to sing, because I don't like to pre-plan. It's like, you know what? You walk into the space and it hits you. Okay, I'm going to do this, you know, and because when we were there originally, I said, hey, I want to attempt a Garth Brooks song, because I always like standing outside the fire. And we were talking about other singers and, you know, originally I was going to do Counting Stars by One Direction, or not One Direction. Sorry, I'm so tired. What's their name? Oh jeez. You know who they are. You know, We Be Counting Stars, you know. Was it one? No, that's anyway. See, I can't even figure it out. It's okay. That's why I leave this in. I leave this in because, you know, sometimes you're searching for ideas and you leave them in because it's organic, you know. It's like when I was watching a movie years ago. Mirror has two faces. Lauren Bacall. And Lauren Bacall's performance is basically her searching for the lines and how natural that is. And she's touching her hair, and she's touching her ear, and all these affectations that she's giving in the performance, because she can't, you know, she's trying to jog the lines. She's not trying to look at the, you know, say to Streisand, hey, cut, I can't remember my lines, you know. She doesn't have them pasted all over the room like Brando would have. But, you know, yeah, when you're searching for something and you're in the midst of doing it, you know, I'm recording as we speak. And I know some people in the past, why don't you just write it down? No. Because then it's not organic, you know, it's not naturally felt. You know, it's like, oh God, it's all rehearsed. And I don't like that. I don't like it when shit's rehearsed, you know. I mean, if you're a musician and you're going to do a performance, yeah, you got to do some rehearsal and you got to figure out where the spaces are, you know. Musicians are all about that, you know. Prince knew about that, and Miles Davis knew about that, where everything fits with, you know, you have that space, and if you can put this in there sonically, even Santana knows about that. It's all about that space. Okay, if you add some horns on this section, kind of not you go you don't want to compress everything, because if you compress it, then it sounds forced. But if you fit everything within that space organically, then it jumps out and really reaches everyone. And you know, Prince and Springsteen and James Brown, think about that. It was all about, let's do this. They would sometimes go into songs that they hadn't rehearsed, so the band always had to be ready on the dime. And Springsteen learned that from James Brown, and James Brown learned that, you know, from other musicians, and Prince learned that from James Brown, you know, and at the same time, Springsteen looked up to Prince because of how Prince would do that. So they all kind of, you know, that's what being a musician is about. You got to be ready to just play on the dime. I think that James Brown would find people if they couldn't play it perfectly. It had to hit it in the pocket. You know, you had to, that's a musical term. You have to hit it in the pocket, and you have to, you know, it has to be as it intended. There can't be any false notes, any false moves within it. So yeah, when you're up there and you're doing it, you know, it's like, okay. And I think of, like, when I was telling them, you know, I sing for my students sometimes, because if we're learning about hyperbole, or we're learning about metaphors, and say, and there's a microphone, it's like, sure, I'll sing it. And so I'll sing it. Okay, well, you know, there's this, there's that, that is this. Now, are they really saying, you know, we be counting stars, you know? Are you able to count all of the stars? Well, no, not necessarily. So this is hyperbole, okay? This is what we're learning about. And they appreciated me doing that, because it makes it more something that's conducive to their learning and to their nature and their attention span. Plus, they're all telling me about these Fortnite songs. And I'm like, I don't play Fortnite. Come on. Did you ever play video games? That's what they would ask me. No, not really. I stopped playing video games when I was probably about 13. I remember I had bought myself, they had those like Nintendos, but it was like the cheap one. It was like a modified Nintendo. It was like a little, it was just the one game console, and you could buy it for like $65 or $40 in 93. And I'd go to the video game place and buy like a used video game, and it didn't have Duck Hunt, and I think I used Christmas money to buy it, and that was the last thing, and a Game Gear. I had a Game Gear, and then I just gave it to my brother. I was like, I'm tired of this. I want to use my hands for something else, you know? And so, yeah, and I was a teenager, so I was like, okay, you know, it's either video games or music. Well, the music won. So then, you know, you collect all this music, and then over time, you shed it, which I have. You shed it. But it's all digitally accessible. I still keep physical copies of certain things that I love. You know, I haven't sold all of it yet. So, but yeah, that's the beautiful freeing feeling of music and what it does for all of us. It does something very different for everyone, though. But it is a universal speech. It is a universal feeling to be able to pull a song out of the air and just go with it. I mean, the one song that comes to mind right now is Queen's I Want It All. And if you listen to it, the band really were really playing around the fact that Freddie didn't have long. They all knew that. He told them. So, okay, it's like, okay, we can't tour anymore. We're just going to record. And so that's what they did, the last two albums. And I Want It All, that's a very grand video, and you can see Freddie's not well, you know, and he vocally could still just do it, you know. But they explain, like, he'd be in the studio and he'd be in a lot of pain, and he'd put down, he'd drink a couple of drinks, and then boom, just vocally just fire it out. So that's the freeing feeling of music, and the determination of someone who is on borrowed time to be able to give us the last of his gift. It's an amazing thing. So, yeah, that's what music means to us. Music is such a universal feeling. I marvel at the musicians, the actual musicians. I know so many of them. I know a few in particular who are very great musicians. They have such a great ear, and to be able to talk to them about music and what it means. And when you hear a note and what and how you take that in, and how sometimes when you have nothing to say to each other, you talk in musical terms. And that's such a icebreaker right there, to be able to talk to someone about your love of music and everything within it. And that really is a freeing thing. And as I think of that, there are some songs that come to mind. Sometimes when someone plays a song for you, they're not just playing it to play it for you. And, you know, I am... Jeez, how do I say this? I'm an empath. I don't always say that. I'm careful who I say that to. And when you get two empaths together, oh, it's interesting. It's very interesting. Even though when the one empath is like, I'm not going to reveal all of my tricks to you, man. And I don't. But when they would play songs for me, ooh, I could tell what they were thinking. I could just tell, just by the song alone. It's like, oh, you chose that one? What? You know, I mean, there was one in particular. Or there were several. There were several. I mean, of course, A Perfect Circle is a given. Pussifer and Tool is a given. Okay? I'm not giving this away. But anyway, they did play one song in particular where I still hear it. And I hear it in my head. And I think, whoa, you're really searching for something. They played Hozier's Take Me to Church. That's where I heard that, and I thought, whoa, jeez, you're really channeling something there, playing that. And then they played The Writing's on the Wall by Sam Smith, as well as Chris Cornell, You Know My Name. And so I did say to them, you're telling me who you are with the music that you're playing. And they said, no, I'm not. It's just music. I said, no. That's where I wanted to turn to them and say, you're not the only empath in this fucking car, man. And I'm having to drive. And I'm like, geez, I'm trying to focus. And then at the same time, I'm like, oh, you're playing this for me? Okay. What are you trying to say to me? What are you trying? I'll say that. Whether you're listening or not, hey, it's all good. I'll say this to you. What are you trying to say to me with those songs? Because I know you're trying to say something. You're trying to say something that you can't verbally say. Okay? Well, that's what music does. Music speaks louder than words, as it always has, and it always will. And I will end tonight with something. You know, I'm gonna play this, and it has a significant meaning. Okay. And so have a good night, everyone. I guess this is for that moment. This is for that moment. And I will not reveal who this is for. If they are listening, they know. This is for that moment. Thank you for that moment. I give you all the love I got. I gave you more than I could give. I gave you love. I gave you all that I had inside.